Morning to each of you. Greet you in the name of Jesus this morning. It's a beautiful morning to be gathered here in the house of God. And good to see the ones from Katata here again as well. And God's design for marriage. Now, I don't know what you had in mind for this message. I know that I had preached a message with that title, and I don't know if it's where y'all got it or not. But I went to look at this message, and I just couldn't get into it. And while I have no trouble getting into a message for marriage, I could not get into the one that I preached, I'm not sure how many years ago, with this title, 3 years ago or something like that. And so I just could, I don't know if you find it this way, but you know, we don't stay at the same place in our marriage. And we keep learning things as we go. And I guess that's the way it'll be for a long time yet. I assume it will be. And my wife and I will be married 18 years this year. And to some of you, that probably seems like we're still young. I'm not sure. But I know I have had to learn a lot of lessons in those 18 years. And things that were very good for me. And also had the privilege of working with those who it was not going very well. And many ways make me very thankful. And also helped me as well. When we help other people, we also find help for ourselves. And I have a burden for this message because troubled marriages aren't just out in the world. There are many families among us where the marriages are maybe not. Some are in trouble and some are less than what they should be. I don't know how you all found it, but I know that probably most of us when we got married thought we had the world by the tail, thought we knew lots about marriage. Thought that our love was one that was unlike anyone else's. And we had the privilege when we were, with the time we got married, or right around the time we got married, there was a lot of our friends. There was like a 1 year period, I think there was like 12, we had 12 weddings in 1 year, something like that. And so we sat under many wedding sermons and, you know, we sat under, lived under this euphoria that we were going to live in married bliss. You know, we weren't married very long until I began to understand that there were some things about my wife that I didn't quite understand. I didn't quite expect. And some of the emotional limitations and, you know, there's just different living with each other than it is seeing each other once a week. And I know she wondered what kind of driver she married sometimes. And I don't know, you know, if a lot of people come to this point in married life where they think, well, you know, it's different than what I expected. Now, maybe that's news to you. Maybe you weren't in for any surprises. And we all of a sudden realize, you know, if this is going to be a successful marriage, if there's going to be love in marriage, if this marriage is going to work, that we're going to need something outside of our own feelings to have a successful marriage. And, you know, it's during this time and realizing this, you know, and thankfully God brings it sometimes slowly into your life, but realizing that marriage is not about feelings as much that, you know, when you come to that point, you realize that, you know, you're really going to go one way or the other. You're either going to go to God and find where the answers are, or you could let it fall apart. And I like the thought that Pete had there, and we need to enter into peace. God has created peace, and we need to enter into it. And God has created a plan for marriage in a way that works, and we need to enter into it. There's a good bit said about marriage in the Bible, and one of the reasons I believe that marriage is very important is because he wants it to typify Christ in the church. He wants a marriage relationship between a man and a woman to be that type of that husband loving his wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And the wife returning that love and adoration for her husband. I would like to take a message from two scriptures today that do not normally take marriage messages from. Or at least, I haven't heard a lot. But it's where I felt like God directed me and as I studied for this message and what is a burden on my heart at the moment. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 31. Now, I don't know, sisters, if you're like my wife at all or not, and I do wish she was here today. And she wouldn't listen in except for the fact that they have company at the moment. And so I would really value her presence here. But I don't know if you feel like her, but when someone preaches from Proverbs chapter 31, it's kind of like, oh no, not that one. It's this high standard that no one can meet. But I would like you to just, for today, I'd like you to just kind of put away all those preconceived thoughts that you have about Proverbs chapter 31. And I would like to suggest to you that Proverbs chapter 31, one of the things that it does, it shows us, there is a picture here that I want you to see. There's a picture here of a healthy marriage. And there's lessons here not only for our sisters, but also for the husbands, here in Proverbs chapter 31. And this is just one of the scriptures we'll take some teaching from. But Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10, "Who can find a virtuous woman, for her price is far above rubies? The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ship. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hands to the poor. Yea, she stretcheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates." Now you turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and 7. We'd like to look at another passage here. We'd like to take lessons from both of these. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19. "What? Know you not that your body is a temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency." Point number one, look at something that is very foundational, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to be married here to glean from this one. Number one is, I belong to God first. I belong to God first. And one of the reasons that we have some marriage struggles in our churches today and among our people is because we have not learned, or some people have not learned, to give themselves over to God first. And it's why I wanted to read the verses here in the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 6. It says, don't you know, he says, that you're not your own. That you can't go around and say, this is my body. I can do with my body what I want to do. But yet many people think that way and enter into marriage that way, believing that they have the right to do what they want to. And we know that this concept is what takes people into abortions, homosexuality, lesbian living, and gender changes. Why? Because they say, I own my own body. I have the right to do with it what I want to do. Now we say, well, we're not there. I hope not. you know, that's not too far from home. Do you see people, maybe they won't say it, but their lifestyle would indicate that, you know what, I work hard in the week, and I deserve some toys to play with. Do you know, men, sometimes it's not, as people grow up, some people never get done playing with toys. They just get bigger and more expensive. Isn't that how it works sometimes? I work hard. I deserve playtime. I worked hard today. I deserve to sit. It's my money. I can do with it what I want to. You know, money's tight right now. I just can't afford to put any money in the offering. I can't go to outreach service, or I can't come to service this afternoon because, you know, I need my nap. I work hard all week. And the nap Sunday afternoon is of utmost value to me. It's my time. It's the time I finally get to have by myself. Isn't Sunday supposed to be a day of rest? What's the big deal about a little bit of lust? After all, it's all around us. I just keep my dark sunglasses on and look where I want to. These preachers that talk about romance novels, they don't know even what they're talking about. I'm going to read them if I want to. And maybe we wouldn't say this, but you know, sometimes there's a lifestyle of, you know what, I look good on Sunday, and I know how to look good at the right time at the right moment. But other than that, it's a lifestyle of, I will do what I want to do. And it's these type of people that find themselves ill-prepared to face married life. Why? Because we have not given our life over to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. You see, someone else owns me. I am not my own. I am bought with a price. I have been redeemed. I have been bought back. You know, and I'm concerned with some of the things I see in the East. And I haven't been out here long enough to know if it's here or not, okay? But I know that people are kind of the same. And I think because when I grew up, I didn't have much money. Okay? And I just didn't have money to buy big toys. And it's okay. I mean, it's okay. It's just the way it was. It was actually good for me. Even though I probably didn't think it at the time. It wasn't like I wasted it. I worked for my dad and I just didn't have much. But you know, this has changed today with many of our youth. I don't know how it is here. I'm just saying my perspective. You know, young men can make, at least in the East, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And, you know, there's money for toys. There's money for nice trucks. You just keep going down the list. But, you know, sometimes when you get to probing around, you realize this is on borrowed money. This is on borrowed money. And I say, what is wrong? What is wrong? And I don't know if you find it this way or not here. I think you probably do that. You know, when you get married and you put your and you have children and there's expenses and there's bills to pay, that there's just not a lot of things left over for some of this kind of stuff. And I look at some of the struggles I think we are already facing in our circles in marriages. And I'm looking at, I feel like we're seeing another generation coming on that is used to they learn to live a lifestyle before marriage. That there's no way that can continue on after marriage. Now, I know there's some room for doing some things maybe while you're single that you can't do after marriage. I understand some of that. But I'm talking about an undisciplined lifestyle of spending money to keep up with the Joneses and to look good. And I don't believe this is necessarily all a youth problem, but it has its roots also with parents. And maybe you're already facing that here. But I just would like to throw out to us that we are not our own. If we have not learned some of these lessons, and if I have not learned to save money, and if I have not learned to be careful in my spending, that I will enter into, I will hit marriage like a block wall mostly. I will not be ready for marriage. Because my body is not my own. You know, young men and young women who learn young in life to give themselves over to Christ and allow that work to start in their life, and they learn to be a young woman and a young man who's giving and giving to the needs of the church, and not only that, maybe going and giving of time, and there's so many ways you can give of time. But that's the kind of lifestyle prepares you for married life, not the others. You know, finally, life is not about looking good, but it's about being real with my struggles and who I am. And you know, that kind of lifestyle, it prepares me for marriage. Number two, God's design is for us to give control of our body to our spouse. We read that here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 4. The wife hath not power. Let's start at verse 3. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. God's design is for us to give control of our body to our spouse. And I have 2 points on this. Letter A, we release control by having our body. We release control of our body by having ours instead of mine. What was mine now becomes ours. You know, the time that I used to use for myself, and I used to spend it with my money and my toys and my projects, now becomes our time, our projects, and our money. You know, the things and the hobbies I had before marriage, the projects I had, or even the toys I had, you know, when I enter into marriage, I may no longer be able to keep those alive. And it is with grief that I watch some of our married men. They get married and they have a child. And you know what? But he still goes hunting plenty. Now, I'm a hunter, okay? I'm not afraid to pick on hunting because I hunt. And anyone who knows me back east knows that I do hunt. But I am very concerned whenever it is bow season and evening, night after night after night after night after night finds the husband in the tree stand, and he's being successful, and he's shooting many deer. But the wife is home alone, and she's the one taking care of the children. You know, having children, and having lots of money, and having my toys spotless generally don't go together. And I know I had some lessons to learn and all that. You know, we were in a world where it is, and you don't have to get very far out of conservative circles, where you find that it's actually common for, okay, mom, she needs a vacation. And so she goes off with her girlfriends because he goes off with a guided hunting trip somewhere, and they excuse this lifestyle. I'm sorry, brothers, that is not the way to live married life. That is not, I believe, what the Bible teaches. That she does her vacations and he does his thing. There's something wrong with that picture. If we're going to release control, if we're going to give ourselves over to the Lordship of Jesus Christ first and then give ourselves to our partner, what was mine becomes ours. And if it means that I only get to sit in the tree stand 3 times... in all season, I guess that's too bad. But that's sometimes the way life is. And I, you know, recently I, you know, I don't know how we are, you know how we are sometimes, young men, you know, we have our vehicles and we like to keep them nice, and there's nothing wrong with that. Recently we had our little daughter was learning to ride bike, and so we have this old van that's 300 some thousand miles that, you know, it's just a plunker we use. And then we have one that's a little nicer. It's 8 years old, but you know, it's considered our nicer one, okay? And, you know, she's learning to ride bike, and of course the bike is don't have the rubber's peeled off the end, you know what I mean? And the metal's sticking out. And she's riding bike and up against the newer van. And you know, there would have been a day that would have really frustrated me. But I looked at my wife and said, it's a family van. You know what? It was scratched when I got it, and I got a few more at this point. And I don't mean to take any glory from that. I'm just saying, young men, young married men, this is the process. What was mine becomes ours. Not only my wife's, but also our family's. It's ours. Letter B, under God's design for us to give control of our body to our spouse, we release control of our own body by giving instead of taking. I don't know how you did it, but I think I entered into marriage relationship with this idea of, you know what, I'll give and she'll take, I'll take and she'll give, and it'll just be this, you know, you work back and forth on all this. And there is some truth to that. But there's a lot more truth to thinking that, you know, I give everything. Wives, you give everything. Husbands, you give everything. Everybody gives 100%. You know, Paul said this verse, that he wasn't speaking of marriage, but it applies to life and needs to be applied to marriage. I have showed you all things, how so laboring you ought to support the weak. And to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And it is a lesson that we need to learn in marriage, that there is more joy, there is more fun in giving. Not only for our spouse, but our family, than receiving. And it really is possible to come to the place where I learn to love to give. It really is. And we naturally come wired the other way. We naturally come wired selfishly. And I don't know if you and your wife had to work through this or not, but you know, when we got married, we had to realize that we were wired a lot differently than we thought we were. I mean, as far as the difference between us. And to learn to bring that together. You know, find times to give when you know your partner cannot give much in return. And I've worked enough in public works to know that there are a lot of people out there with the concept of, I give so that I can receive. You understand what I'm talking about? But let me tell you, that is not the love of Christ for his church. That is not a picture of the love that Christ had for his church. He gave himself knowing that at least for that moment, everybody was going to run the other way. Number three, God designed that we would give our spouse due benevolence. The word benevolence is kindness and goodwill. You know, it's the ones closest to us that we so easily take for granted. Husbands, we take our wives for granted too often. Wives, you probably take your husbands for granted too often. They always are there for you in some way. I'd like to look at the husbands first a little bit. Due benevolence brings out the best in our marriage partner. I don't know if you've ever Dr. Ted Roberts is a man who talks about moral purity. And he says this, he said, you can do whatever you want. He says that the first question God's going to ask you when you get to heaven, he said, is your wife more beautiful now than the day you married her? And you all know why he's asking that, right? You understand why he says that's a question. Because, you know, it is really within our power in many ways to make our wife more beautiful. It's the same way over here. And some of the things we talk about can easily cross, they do cross over. And the question I have is, how do we view our wives? You know, husbands, how do we view our wives? In Proverbs chapter 31, it says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her. I'm just picking out some of the phrases that I believe could speak to husbands. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her. She will do me good all the days of my life. And I'm trying to show us the picture of how that husband looked at that woman there in Proverbs chapter 31, okay? I think there's a lesson for us. She openeth her mouth with wisdom. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praiseth her. And too many times, maybe look at that passage and we say, well, you know, open your mouth with wisdom and all this. And, you know, but, you know, many times it's the husband can make the woman that way or make her not that way. You understand what I'm saying? And a question I have here is, do I believe that my wife has tremendous insights and tremendous wisdom that I can glean from? Do I believe that? Do I believe she doesn't know much, and that she sure is privileged to have married me? And I'm not joking on that. We had a couple around our table eating lunch together, and he made that comment, and he said, she said about, I forget what it was, and he said, you can sure be glad you married me. And I thought, you arrogant little boy, you. And, you know, I can't be too hard on him, because you know what? I had that attitude one day. I did have that attitude one day. And I can remember my wife crying a couple times and saying, honey, I just wish I didn't feel so condemned, I think's the word she used. And, you know, it hurt. But, you know, we don't even have to say these words that you are so privileged to be married to me. But we communicate that by how we treat them, by how we look at their input. Do you know it's really the other way around? I am so privileged to be married to my wife. I am so privileged to be married to her. And you know, if I want to truly love my wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, you know, one of the things I'm going to have to quit doing is comparing her with other women. Now, we don't even like to say that kind of stuff. That's embarrassing that we even do that, isn't it? You know, that can be a common struggle, that we look, at least at some point in our life, and we look and we say, you know what, I wish my wife was a little more like this. And you know, when we take that attitude, it actually drives us farther from the very thing that we want. I would like us to notice a few things about this woman in Proverbs. She was obviously a woman who operated with confidence. That's pretty easy to see in that chapter. That she was doing all of this. She was one who was operating in confidence. Her husband trusted her, it says. It says she was not afraid. And this is my personal belief, that does not reflect on her as much as it reflects on her husband. I can take you to marriages where the woman is very insecure, is very afraid. And I can also show you a husband who does not know how to take his place. And one of the things that I had to learn, one of the hard lessons of life I've had to learn, is, you know, I don't make the marriage by downgrading my wife and picking out her problems. But I make the marriage, and I make this woman, and that you see in Proverbs 31, by encouraging her, by blessing her, by giving her confidence. Honey, you did such a great job there, and you build each other up. And you know, the day that I realized that, I can remember there was a time, I think it was around our 10-year marriage mark. There was a time there, my wife can point to it, when, you know, I realized that, you know what, I have some changes that I need to make. And the way I view myself, the way I view my wife, it had its roots in being a morally pure person. It wasn't like I was out into adultery, but there's just some thought processes that were wrong. You know, when I got to the point where I realized that I need to change, you know, it's just amazing how my wife changed. But I don't think it was her so much as that I changed. And it could be that way for either side of the house. Some of this goes back and forth. It is obviously a wife who was operating under direction, under liberties. We had direction. And I just want to encourage you as husbands, build your wife up. Seek to be that encouragement and that blessing to her and watch her blossom. It says there in Proverbs 31, and her husband praiseth her. Her husband praiseth her. I think there's a lesson for us. There's a lesson for me there. There's a verse in 1 Peter chapter 3 that I also want to read. I think it's a lesson for us as well. There is a lesson. It's a verse I've used to teach other men who are struggling. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor. And that honor is the word we want to look at. Unto the wife as the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. The word honor there is a very interesting word. It means to esteem, especially of the highest degree. That's what it says. Of the highest degree. Husbands, I want to ask you a question. Do you have a queen in your house? Do you have a queen in your house? I hope you do. That is, I look at the meaning of that word. It says to esteem with dignity, to esteem of the highest degree. And I don't know what else to refer it to other than a queen. Does the queen live there? And that's not so much reflecting about her, it's reflecting about my attitude about her. What that's referring to. Being an example, you know, how can I treat her as a queen? You know, some of the small things in life are really so important. And I know you've heard these, and you know these, but you know, we need reminded. And common courtesy, such as thank you, and all those are so important. You know, sometimes things happen in homes, you know, where, you know, even at the table, where that no one even thinks to say thank you. And I just think that should not be a part of our homes. Not only don't say thank you if they don't like the meal, they are free to use cutting words about the meal. I just think that is out of place. I don't think that fits with a husband who is praising her, a husband who is rising up and calling her blessed. Doesn't mean he does it, but the husband will not allow the children to do it either. You're not complaining about your food, you can go without. Children soon learn some of those things. And recognizing our wife as the weaker vessel, it doesn't mean we look down our nose at them, but we understand how God made them and pick up for them in their weakness. And one of the ways we do that is by being that spiritual leader in the home. You know, a wife finds tremendous trust and anchor and a rock in a husband that gives spiritual leadership. It's giving leadership in the home. And when she knows her husband has a relationship with Jesus Christ, and she knows that he wants to guide the home in the right way, and she knows that his heart is with God, there's an anchor there for her. I can take you to places where it's the other way. And she wonders is her husband really saved? And there's just so much harder to put that anchor, to trust we dishonor our wife when we live a double life. Maybe it's not a double life, just refuse to take the leadership. And you know, mostly when we don't take leadership in the home, it's because there are unresolved issues in our life. There are past hurts we've not dealt with. Or maybe sins, hidden sins that we have not really conquered. Let's talk to the wives here a little bit now. And I struggle sometimes, to be frank with the wives, because, I don't know. A couple reasons. One is, I really do believe there's a lot of responsibility lays on the husband. And there are many times when a husband gives their leadership, the husband is what he should be, and loves his wife as Christ loved the church, that's such an important ingredient. However, the Bible does give direction to wives. And I have seen it violated. It's just harder to talk to the more tender gender in a straight way, if I can say it that way. But yet I also know that, you know, sometimes there have been husbands that really have tried very hard and it still hasn't went well. And so it's not a one-sided thing. But I would like us to look a little bit at, as we think about Proverbs chapter 31. Let's get back there. Let's not look at what she does, but what her husband is. Okay? Too many times Proverbs 31 is read looking at what all this woman does. And I want us to kind of just lay that aside, okay? Lay that aside for today. But what her husband is. So you see, it's the same way as over here. And I've heard the comment more than once that she has done so much for him. Have you ever heard that comment before? Something to that effect? I have. And it speaks to me of a wife that is really in there. She is buckling in and she is doing her part. And yes, like all other husbands, he has needs. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay, let's look at what was here, okay? Verses 23 through 31. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth and delivereth girdles to the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also calls her blessed, and he praiseth her. Wives, I want you to think about this. That, you know, sometimes men can get up and they seem like a strong leader, seems like they got a lot of things together. But, you know, behind that man, behind the man that sits in the gates and talks with the elders, is a man who has a wife with an anchor. And it's so important that you realize that you really do help your husband. You really do make your husband what he is. That doesn't mean you're going to stand before God and give an account of his life. The Bible doesn't say that. You'll give an account for your own life. But I am saying, and I want us to think about, there is a direct connection between how you look at your husband, your view of your husband, how you treat your husband, and what he is. Okay? And you really do have the potential. You really do have the potential to make him into something very valuable. Or you really have the potential to make him walk around like a whipped puppy all the time. And I'd like to suggest and look at this. Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, it says, render due benevolence. And it was command to both wives and husbands. But I'd like to notice the verses here, what Proverbs says, that she opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. And I know that when I say this, it's a sensitive thing for ladies, okay? Do you know a sharp tongue is, can we be fair with that? Sometimes a sharp tongue is something that women struggle with, right? But you know, that sharp tongue, that those sharp words really do have the potential to do harm to your husband that you probably don't realize. And we use sharp words, we use cutting words, and we make him feel stupid. We are making him something less than he really could be. And I know that sometimes our wives and I know my wife has really done me a favor by giving me a good talking to sometimes, okay? Sometimes they just look at us and they see needs in their lives, and there's no one better than them to give us a good talking to. But you know, wives, husbands know, just like you do, husbands know if that talking to was meant to help you and build you up, or if it's meant to make you look stupid and tear you down. You see, we know the difference, just like you do. Just like you do. And I'll ask another question, is how do you talk about your husband in the presence of other people? And it's a critical point, because you know, if you want your husband to come home and to share his burdens with you and his life with you, his struggles need to stay with you. And a wife, they'll go out and talk to her best friends, or maybe not even her best friends, maybe it's just the church ladies, about the faults of her husband. She's only cutting her own throat. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her. And I want you to remember that your husband really does trust you. And one of the things as husbands that we struggle with, you know we have weaknesses. We know we have things that we struggle with that we're embarrassed to talk to you about. But when a man has a wife who will come alongside of him and not will recognize his weakness, but instead of tearing him down, she buckles in with him and helps him through that. You do something for your husband that words probably cannot explain. And it's the picture we see here in Proverbs chapter 1. It's a picture of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And in the struggles of moral purity in our day and age, wives, you have a tremendous work there. And I know women respond different to that. But if you're going to respond in a lot of hot anger, you're only driving away the very thing that you really want. You need to buckle in with your husband on those issues and work with him. Thinking about the heart of her husband to safely trust in her. You know, it's more than just with some of those confidential issues of life. Yeah, there's just a lot of trust that can be delivered to a wife whenever she can have a bank card and a credit card and he knows it's safe with her. There's a lot of confidence can be put in a woman when they know that that's part of the agenda. The heart of her husband to safely trust in her. And when he has a wife that's kicking in and buckling in with him and anchoring in and pulling with him, there's a tremendous bond that is created between a husband and wife. You know, I don't even know if I should hardly bring this up, but once in a while we run into it, okay? Where maybe the husband is disappointed because he comes home and, well, she just sat on her duff all day, and you know, there's nothing really got done. And I'm gonna be very sensitive to this, because you know what? When a woman has children and are taking care of children, I don't expect the house to be spotless. I don't think any husband does. Do you know a husband, there's a big difference between how a husband will feel when he knows that she really has been pulling her load, or when he realizes he comes home and, oh, she spent all day on Kindle and the dishes aren't washed and this ain't done. Maybe there's no one here like that, but that's, maybe there is, and that's why I need to preach it, because sometimes it's there and I can preach openly because I don't know if it's here. Out of her mouth flows wisdom because she has learned to accept the disappointments of life. Wisdom doesn't come by everything going the way I want it to go. Wisdom doesn't come from marrying a man who has all the money that she needs. Wisdom don't come by reading romance novels. But wisdom comes when we accept the disappointments that life brings. And you're going to have them. Your husband is going to have disappointments. There's going to be disappointments in a job. There's going to be disappointments that life faces. Maybe you won't be able to have any children. And the list can go on. And your friends can just have them all they want. Wisdom comes when we accept the disappointments that life brings. And I know that if we would go to Ephesians chapter 5, it's very strong on husbands love and wives submit. Now, I haven't really been using that just because I didn't feel led to go there. But I'd like to maybe term another way is to have a teachable spirit. Have a teachable spirit. Can people teach you? Can your husband teach you? It's the one thing that is a blessing. You know, if a husband's afraid that if he comes and tells her, well, this is one thing we need to change. If he knows fire is going to fly, then, you know. But if he knows that his wife has a teachable spirit, it makes it much easier. Fourthly and lastly, God designed that marriage would be an intimate relationship. We see that there in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 4 through 5. Go back and read that again to refresh our memory. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except to be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. One of the big things is for couples today to, you know what, we've been slaving away here a while. Let's just go out for, we need to go out to a honeymoon cabin for a couple of days. And maybe y'all don't do that out west, but I'm sure you do. And you know, one of the things that happens is too many times couples look at something like this where we need this romantic experience in our life. We just did it in February. And so I actually enjoy that. But you know, the idea that this honeymoon cabin is going to fix or make our marriage, it don't work. the wrong concept. Mostly what happens when couples go away like that, what has been happening in the home all along, it becomes magnified at that cabin. Meaning, if we can't work together in the home, if we haven't been getting along together, when we go to the cabin, it only gets worse. But you know, if we learn to work together at home, we learn to love, we don't feel like it. And we work together. And we're a team pulling together. And someday we get the opportunity to do that. Oh, it'll be a tremendous blessing. But let's remember, the things that we sometimes look to that we think will be the ultimate, they only reflect, what happens there will only reflect what is happening in the everyday experiences at home. Just a couple words. Obviously, if it was all married, a couple weeks would say more, but husbands, we need to be real with the fact that we can very quickly become selfish in this relationship. Intimacy is a joy when we learn to give instead of take. And selfishness only drives our wife away. Wives, I do want you to notice something in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, is that this is a two-way street. And you know, the scenery gets pretty dry if everything is one way. And I know some of the hardest times in life, I believe, are when children are young and at home and there's a lot of work to do. That's just the way it is, right? Children are young, you got 3 or 4 or whatever it is, or 5 or 6. There's not a lot of time to just sit around, okay? But you know, there still is a lot of truth that if you want to make this marriage work and you want to have a husband who loves and appreciates you, that it's okay if sometimes your husband comes home and he finds you ragged out and tired and you're just about shot, okay? But you can't have that as a way of life. Learn to put structure to your day that when the children get down for a nap, you do too. And that's one of the things I had to learn in life, and I'm embarrassed to admit it. But, you know, I used to be, one of my weaknesses, I'm a performance-based person, if I can say it that way. I like to see performance, okay? And I had to get to the point in life where I realized, you know what, am I okay with my wife taking a nap, I actually want her to be able to take a nap in the day. She needs that. And I want you to remember, wives, that your husbands have needs that only you can meet, and only you should meet. And remember that in the world that we live in today. Well, just a question in closing here. We'll actually have something else yet, a poem. But it's a question we should all ask. Is my marriage a type of Christ in the church? Does it reflect that? Because that is what God wants. That is what God wants. He wants to see marriages that when people of the world look at that and they see true love. And men, if you work out in public works, there are all kinds of comments. And you know what it is about marriage and about wives and all that stuff. And I still remember, you know, of course, it's just somehow, for some reason, it's the cool thing for husbands of the world to just make a sarcastic or degrading comment about their wife. I challenge you to step up to the plate and say something positive and watch their reaction. I remember a time that I did that, and the guy just kind of looked at me. I mean, that's not something you hear in the world. But say something positive. Let this light shine out. Okay, I'd like to read a poem, and I don't know, I guess it fits with, the message. I like it, and it's more to men, and maybe it's to young men, okay? It is to young men. And I do have a burden for our young men. I was at a marriage. We were at a minister's conference recently, and there was a message there on helping troubled marriages. And one of the things that the speaker said there is he said, we have got to do a better job at helping our young men be ready for marriage. Maybe that don't connect with congregation. I don't know. But it connects with me. Why? Because some of the patterns of lifestyle that we talked about early on in the message, okay? That's why we need to help prepare them. And I'm not afraid to put a lot of pressure on young men. I know that there can be ladies out there that are bad eggs, okay? If I don't know how else to say it. That really don't, they're not something you want for a wife, okay? But I also know that, and have seen, that a man who has a relationship with Jesus Christ can take an insecure girl and can make her into something. And that's my prayer for you. But if you as the leader of the home, that figure of Christ, if I can put it that way, don't know Jesus Christ. Don't know what it is to live a life of purity. You know, you're going to get married and just, that woman's going to fall to pieces on you. That girl is. I'd like to read you this poem. It says, A Woman's Questions. Do you know that you have asked for the costliest thing forever made by his hand above, a woman's heart and a woman's life and a woman's wonderful love? Do you know you have asked for this priceless thing as a child may ask for a toy, demanding what others have died to win with the reckless dash of a boy? You have written my lesson of duty out, man-like you have questioned me. Now stand at the bars of my woman's soul until I shall question thee. You require your mutton shall always be hot, your socks and your shirt be whole. I require your heart be true as God's stars and pure as is heaven your soul. You require a cook for your mutton and beef. I require a far greater thing. A seamstress you're wanting for socks and shirts. I look for a man and a king. A king for the beautiful realm called home, and a man that his maker God shall look upon as he did at the first and say it is very good. I am fair and young, but the rose may fade from this soft young cheek. With a soft young cheek one day. Will you love me then? Mid the falling of leaves, as you did among the blossoms of May. Is your heart an ocean so strong and true? I may launch my all on its tide. A loving woman finds heaven or hell on the day she's made a bride. I require all things that are good and true, all things that a man should be. If you give this all, I would stake my life to be all you demand of me. If you cannot be this, a laundress and a cook, you can hire and little to pay. But a woman's heart and a woman's life are not to be won that way. By Leonard Lathrop. You know, young men, I didn't think about some of these things either when I asked my wife. But one of the things that has come very clear to me is that when a woman says yes in the marriage vow, she really is putting a lot at stake. She really is. I just want to challenge you as young men to have a relationship with Jesus Christ, to love him. Young men, husbands, lest you mar that beautiful type of Christ in the church.